everybody. Welcome to episode 458 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about the second issue of Superman, written by Brian Michael Bendis. We've got pencils by Ivan Reis. We've got inks by his longtime collaborator, Joe Prado. Also, colors by Alex Sinclair. So we saw in the first issue of Superman that the entire Earth had been pushed into the Phantom Zone. We don't know how, we don't know why, and this issue doesn't provide any more answers to that. It actually opens up with a flashback. Apparently many years ago, the Temerians and the Thanagarians did battle on a planet designated as 497, an uncharted world. Not 100% sure why this little flashback is in there, other than we see that leading the Thanagarian forces is Rogolzar himself. And this is before he lost part of his nose and got scarred up. He looks much younger. And once the Temerians see that Rogolzar is leading the charge, the leader of the Temerians orders a retreat. So I guess it's just to show how formidable Rogolzar is, that, you know, an entire army who is ready to fight for this new world, all fired up. As soon as they see Rogolzar, they're ready to retreat. So maybe it's just to show how formidable Rogolzar is, or maybe we'll learn more about this later on when we find out the origin of Rogolzar, more about his background. So from there, the scene shifts to just outside Earth. Superman is rescuing a space shuttle that's somehow managed to be transported into the Phantom Zone as well, despite the fact that it wasn't on Earth. But it looks like it's starting to drift away from the planet. So Superman is able to rescue that. And while he's doing that, he's thinking about a question that Oliver Queen, Green Arrow, asked him at one point. How do you not go crazy, basically? Because all you hear all the time is all the screams for help and the disasters and all the bad stuff that goes on around the planet 24/7. You can't turn it off. And Superman's thinking to himself, well, first of all, yeah, I can turn it off, but I never have and I never will. And you're right. I do hear, you know, the screams, the madness, the hate. It never stops. And also the ignorance. He says the ignorance sometimes never stops, and it breaks his heart. But the other thing, and it's his wife who pointed it out, Lois Lane, is that he also gets to hear what happens after the scream, whether it's policemen, firemen, EMTs, or just regular people that reach out when someone's in trouble, even in times of natural disasters or catastrophes. It seems that the world works. And so that continues to give Superman hope and continues to, you know, help him do what he does. Just the fact that sometimes someone screams and before he can even lift a finger, there are others who reach out and help, and you know, the situation's resolved before he could even get there. But all that being said, the world is not working today. Not with the Earth being in the Phantom Zone. And then there's a short sequence here where he says, I'm not going to say this day sucks. I refuse. Because he's a professional writer and award-winning journalist, and he should be able to come up with something to describe the fact that the entire planet is in the Phantom Zone that's more poetic and illustrative than suck. But he doesn't. He doesn't say anything else. He just talks about how the science of the entire world has been changed, and he doesn't have any idea how long the Earth can continue to exist and things function properly, like gravity and things like that, when the whole Earth is in the Phantom Zone. So we actually request that John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, activate the psychic link between all the members of the Justice League, and they all sort of report in: Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Hawkman, Plastic Man, and Flash, and they're all dealing with various issues. No one's sure where Green Lantern is. The oceans are bubbling away. Plastic Man asks a really good question. How long can the Earth continue to be the Earth if it's not rotating around the sun? And so we end this sequence with a picture of Superman that's very illustrative by Yvonne Reese. And you can tell he looks a little overwhelmed, like he's unsure what he's supposed to do. And then it shifts to Rogol Zar. And he's talking about the fact that this is where the Phantom Zone, that is where Kryptonians threw away their trash. And it took him a moment to realize that he wasn't dead. He had come to Earth for the purpose of cleansing the galaxy of Kryptonians, what he feels is a righteous cause. And he knew perhaps he could die in battle, and death would mean failure. But at least it's a warrior's death, not this dishonor of being pushed into the Phantom Zone. But he goes on to say that it's not the first time that the winds of battle have thrown him into the unknown. And it has been quite some time since he's found himself anywhere this unknown. And we see him confronted in the Phantom Zone by the Nuclear Man, a throwback, a nod to Superman, The Quest for Peace, Superman 4, Christopher Reeve movie. I don't know that he's ever shown up in the proper DC universe before, but he does here. He's wearing a Superman cape for some reason, and that's enough reason for Rogol Zar to basically destroy him as he bashes in his head, and Nuclear Man kind of explodes in a mushroom cloud. And Rogol Zar thinks how satisfying that is, and then looks up to see the Earth. And he's like, oh, a second chance, another chance to cleanse the galaxy of the Kryptonian rot. And he starts to fly toward it. And he thinks about how he'll drag Kal-El burning through the streets of his own home planet. And he actually sees Kal-El. He sees Superman there guarding his planet. And he thinks to himself, no, not yet. And as Superman, I don't think Superman sees him. But he thinks to himself that he knows what's out there in the Phantom Zone. Namely, he knows Rogol Zar is out there. And he also knows that he doesn't know what else is out there. There are things and beings in the Phantom Zone that were put there long before he was born. So he does realize that although he knows Rogol Zar is out there as a threat, he doesn't know what other threats are out there. He knows he's working from a place of disadvantage. And he doesn't know how many threats are out there or how long the Earth can last. And the final thing that he's worried about is, even though he feels good now and powered up, there's no yellow sun in the Phantom Zone. So eventually his powers are going to start to fade. So as he flies back toward Earth, Rogol Zar thinks to himself that this is an opportunity and he needs an army. So next we see the scene shift to the Fortress of Solitude. Flash is there. Him and Superman are speculating on who might have the ability to have pushed the Earth into the Phantom Zone. Superman's checking in on the Phantom Zone projector. He checks with Kalix that no one has been there, and that's in fact the case. And also the Phantom Zone projector that's there isn't really large enough to have moved the Earth into the Phantom Zone. So while they're discussing, Flash seems to kind of lose consciousness, gets really dizzy. A lot of the other Justice League members check in and say they're not feeling right either. They're feeling wild discomfort in their chest and bowels. So we're left with Superman thinking that his friends are falling, his planet's in immediate danger, they're surrounded by unknown enemies, and right then it hits him that he may never see his family again. Like, what if John and Lois come back to Earth and Jor-El come back to Earth, or where Earth should be, while Earth is not there? So next, Rogol Zar's army and the Kryptonian damned in issue 3. So a pretty solid issue. Like I said, we didn't really get much story advancement as far as why the Earth is in the Phantom Zone or how it got to be there. It's not to say that there's not worth to this issue, but it is a prime example of Bendis's decompressed storytelling style, right? The way it's constructed, we get the first half of the book is, it might as well be Superman flying around with thought balloons. I know thought balloons aren't a thing anymore, right? It used to be that in comics, if you got the word balloons, you knew that's when the character was saying something, but you'd get these thought balloons where it'd be like little dots leading up to a cloud looking word balloon. And it would be not what the character was saying out loud, but what the character was thinking. And it was a way to, for writers to give us exposition or let us know, you know, what a character was thinking or feeling. And, you know, at some point it just kind of went away. But really the first half of this issue, that's what it is. That's what we're getting. We're getting Superman's feelings, Superman's thoughts. But instead of doing it in thought balloons, they're just little like dialogue boxes, right? Exposition. And it's cool. It's interesting to hear these ideas, to hear about the conversation that Superman had with Oliver Queen and the way he looks at, you know, his super hearing and the way he looks at the people of Earth and society and all that, right? It's great. And then the second half of the issue, we kind of get Rogel Czar doing the same thing. It's much less articulate and it's much less quantity. He's clearly a being who is very singularly focused on whatever his particular goal is at that time. And he doesn't really think about anything else. And then we get a few pages at the end with actual interaction between characters, with actual word balloons with Flash and Superman. So again, when you break it down, there's not really much that happened in this issue, right? Like we learned the Earth's in the Phantom Zone. Okay, already knew that. Superman, through his thoughts, kind of sets up what the status quo or the threats are currently. We get confirmation of the threat of Rogel Czar. You know, it might as well be a continuation of the Man of Steel series, the sixth issue that launched Brian Michael Bendis' Superman. But other than that, what do we get? What do we know? Not much, right? In a way, all the threats and the things that Kal-El or Superman thinks about, you know, yeah, any longtime Superman reader kind of inherently knew those things. So again, I'm just not sure what it brings to the table. But this is very much a Brian Michael Bendis kind of story, right? Like he tells his stories kind of very slowly. And so again, I haven't read a ton of Brian Michael Bendis other than his early Ultimate Spider-Man run. And I know a lot of people love his writing. I don't hold him in that high esteem just because I haven't read a lot of his stuff. And I'm still, despite having read the Man of Steel miniseries and now, you know, an issue of Action and two issues of Superman, I still am kind of struggling to see where exactly he's coming at. I hope you all listened to last week's Superman Sunday. We had Adam from Talking Superman on, and he gave me a lot of food for thought. And I still do need to go back kind of with his perspective, with Adam's perspective, and read that Superman Man of Steel series again, and maybe I can get more out of it. Because he was very surprised to hear that I still wasn't sure on who Brian Michael Bendis' Superman is, because he feels like he has a good idea. And maybe that's the case. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe the devil's in the details, right? Maybe who Superman is to Bendis is those little things that he talks about, like whenever he shows us how Superman's using his powers, or the fact that Superman would never turn off his super hearing. Maybe that's, you know, those little things are who Superman is to Bendis. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just waiting for the completion of an arc, because despite the fact that we got six issues of Superman Man of Steel, I don't really feel like anything got wrapped up, right? Like, Rogel Czar got thrown into the Phantom Zone. Now the Earth's in the Phantom Zone. So like I said, the Superman title just feels like a continuation of that story. So maybe I'm waiting for, can I get one complete story from Brian Michael Bendis? One complete plot thread, like from start to finish. And then I'll feel like I have an understanding. That's not to say that I'm not enjoying what Superman is right now in Bendis' hands, but I will say I'm not enjoying it as much as I liked what Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason were doing in Superman title, or what Dan Jurgens was doing in Action Comics. This definitely has a different feel. And I Bendis is certainly telling a compelling story in as much as I want the answers to, okay, when are John and Lois coming back? What did they see out there? How's it going to change the story? How's their interaction going to affect Superman going forward? Where's Rogal Zar from? Why does he hate Kryptonians so much? Why does he want to cleanse the galaxy of them? What's going on with the Daily Planet and all that kind of mystery and intrigue that Bendis has introduced. Also, obviously the big one in Superman, how did the Earth get into the Phantom Zone? Why was it placed there? And, you know, who's behind it? And how are the heroes of Earth going to fix it? Right? Like, I want answers to all these questions. I just wish Bendis would get there a little quicker. But again, I understand that this is his style. This is the way he likes to tell stories. And I know there's probably a lot of people that are waiting for the trade, as it were, for these Superman titles, because that's often how a lot of Brian Michael Bendis's stories are consumed. And a lot of people think it's because that he writes that way, right? He writes with a thought toward how it's going to read in trade. So I did enjoy this issue, but I'm just ready, you know, to have the story move along a little faster. I will. One thing that I'm not disappointed in at all is Ivan Reis's art. The guy's a brilliant artist, very cinematic in scope, which suits kind of the galactic, cosmic, important feel of the Earth being trapped in the Phantom Zone. You know, he's got his art is like right in my wheelhouse. It's the stuff I love the most. It's very, very clean lines, thin lines, a lot of detail. And great facial expressions, wonderful action scenes. He varies up the panel layouts on the pages very well. You know, we have some big splashes that don't even have any borders. We have some sometimes thin vertical panels. Sometimes it's more like letterbox horizontal panels. Some of the panels with Rogal Zar are much smaller, and we get a lot of story and sequence pretty quickly. You know, he within the panels themselves, he varies up the angle, close-ups, you know, more panoramic shots at times. He's a brilliant sequential artist, and there's nothing about this art which isn't amazing. And of course, you pair him up with his longtime inker Joe Prado, and the art is perfect. And then of course, Alex Sinclair, brilliant colorist. Works with Jim Lee a lot. Seeing his colors over the art from Prado and Ivan Reis is wonderful. He did the entire Man of Steel miniseries also. Alex Sinclair did. He colored it. So maybe that's also part of the reason that this feels like a continuation of that series. You know, we had Ivan Reis pencil the first issue of that Man of Steel miniseries. And so it looks exactly like this. You've got the same art team and the same writer. So I'm sure that's part of the reason why it, you know, feels, it has that same feel and tone. So certainly nothing wrong with that. It's great art. There's also some really cool covers. The regular cover by Ivan Reis has Superman trying to break out of like the Phantom Zone, but the Phantom Zone is like that piece of glass, like that spinning mirror represented as it was in Superman 2. The Christopher Reeve movie, when General Zod and his lieutenant, so to speak, were trapped in there. I always thought that was a cool visual, the way that it looked. There's also a watercolor cover by David Mack that shows a lot of movement as Superman's flying toward the viewer. And then the cover I bought, which was the Adam Hughes cover, which is also a kind of a nod to Christopher Reeve in the first Superman movie. Him and Clark Kent and Lois Lane are in an alley, and a would-be mugger fires a gun at Lois, and Superman catches the bullets. This is very much a nod to that, and it's beautifully done. It's amazing. So you've got Lois there in the background looking surprised and scared that the bullets are coming toward her. You've got Superman about to catch the bullets. And then behind Lois, there's a window. And in the window, you see the reflection of the assailant firing his gun. So really, really great job on all of those covers. All right, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Superman Sunday. Thanks for joining me as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform or app you use. The ratings really help us with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available there as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, the next convention I'll be at is Comic-Con Palm Springs in Palm Springs, California, coming up the last weekend in August. So hope to see a lot of you there. Once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.